I went to Blade and Races, 'twas on the 9th of June, 1862 on a summer's afternoon. I took the bus for Bamberger's and she was heavy laden. Away we went along Collinwood Street.
Yo, what is good, ladies and germs? Welcome to another episode of CHN Radio. This is episode, maybe it's episode 227. I don't know. I've been wrong before. I'm Elijah and I'm, of course, joined by the not sick and illustrious co-host with the most, the one who won't boast, who at one point could only stomach toast.
That's right.
Josh, how you doing?
I'm feeling better this week. So
yeah.
If everyone's missing us, it's we've had back-to-back weeks of illness.
It's been like 3 weeks since we've done an episode, which is wild. But first and foremost, happy Thanksgiving to those who celebrated. I have no idea if the Brits do Thanksgiving. I think they do it in Canada.
That they do it for fun, right?
Okay, that's weird.
Because I thought I had heard people talking about it on British football podcasts. And some people have sort of like a Friendsgiving.
Yeah.
So they talk about what they're thankful for, but not necessarily as like historically connected as we are to.
We don't want to be historically connected to what Thanksgiving was about. If you're ever wondering, and you're American, about like Thanksgiving and its origins, just look into it. Like the first year of Thanksgiving is what you're told, and then the second year and third year and fourth year of Thanksgiving is utterly horrific. So there, that'll ruin your dreams. But apologies for the absence. We had this all-time podcast injury report where Josh was sick 1 week for the whole week, and then I was sick the following week, and then the next week was Thanksgiving, and most of my family, well, I guess my nuclear family, was all in Tucson. So I had people staying at my home who I don't know if they were trying to listen to a podcast at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So we're back. Should be back to business as usual. I don't know. Josh, you have anything to add before we dive into everything?
No, I think there's so much ground to cover. We should probably just get going.
Yeah, that's true. So let's get started with a little fast fantasy update from Josh.
Yeah.
Get it going.
Let's do the fast fantasy update. Somehow I'm still in first place, man, like with 867 points. Pacific Northeast is still in second with 814 points. Comeback Carius is up to third on 786 points. The biggest earners this week were Willamette Dammit FC with 79 points, which was huge, actually, considering the average was pretty low. So he's up to 26th. Shamod PDX is had 67 points, is up to 8th. And Schmeichel Jackson with 63 points is up to 5th. You, my friend, had 47 points and dropped to 25th on 695 total. Your lineup looks solid, though, man. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It just didn't perform. Well, and I think that was sort of like the case for a lot of people.
But I think we're bearing the lead. I dropped to 25th, which means I've gained like 12 spots.
From where you once were, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like,
because
I think we're bearing the lead. Is that you told me that I'd eventually get out of being at the bottom of the league, and here I am. I'm out of the bottom. I'm not in the relegation zone.
No, and your points total for the week was 47, and the average was 46. So technically, you're above average.
Good.
Take it. This week is a funky week, with lots of European football. I would recommend waiting until Friday night to make any changes, double check injuries and flagged players. I risked Jared Bowen and got no returns on Jared Bowen, and I risked Matty Cash and got no returns on Matty Cash. And I also risked, the big man up top for Man City, and I did get some points, but I captained I captained Salah, so I did not get all of the Haaland points.
There is no reason, in my opinion, why anyone should not be captaining Haaland.
Well, there,
it's such a boom or bust, but like it's like boom or average is what you're going to get from him. Like, he's either going to have 3 goals and you're going to look really good, or he's going to have like a bad day for him is still a decent fantasy showing. Like,
it was City versus Liverpool, and so to me it's 50-50. And Salah, I think historically, has had a couple of good matches against City.
Yeah, so. I'm just not betting on a robot. I'm not betting against a robot, but
sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Continue.
So lots of people dropped him. I think he was owned at one point by like 94% of all FPL players, and this week he was only owned by like 87%. So still, that's like one of the most owned players ever. But he was dropped by a significant number of players. So people will probably add him back up, trying to spread those points out, but I mean, he's not injured and he's getting returned. So that's fantasy. And that probably took a lot longer than we needed to for a fast fantasy update. It was a moderately quick fantasy update.
To be fair, it's been 3 weeks since there's been an update. So
this is fair. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Just watch those injuries. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. 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 Watch the injuries, especially if you're a Newcastle fan. Okay. Women's team. What's new there?
Newcastle United women are currently second in the FA WPL Premier Division, behind Burnley by a point, but have a match in hand. They used to have 3 matches in hand. They're catching up on points, but they're also burning those matches. They haven't lost, right? I mean, they've done nothing but win, but they're just catching up for the first place team. They last won in the league against Forest 2 weeks ago. One of those updates we missed, obviously. And they are home versus West Brom this Sunday at Kingston Park. Should they win and Burnley draw or lose, then Newcastle United go top. But there's still, over half the season to go. So just, keep your eyes peeled. Last Sunday, they won away to Chorley 5-0 in the FA Women's Cup second round. And they host Stoke City in round 3. That match is currently scheduled for December 10th.
Yeah, makes
things
sense.
Things change, but yeah, keep your eye on the schedule, and if you can get out to Kingston Park Stadium, then do so. I am super jealous, and I wish that I could.
Yeah, facts. All right, and then just one slight bit of news that pertains to Newcastle. It's a weird one because, sorry, my throat's a little scratchy.
Can I put this in a category? Can I invent a category? I don't know if I
yeah.
I want to invent a category for news and rumors and notes, and this one goes into the punk ass news.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear your explanation after I reveal the story.
Yes.
But essentially, the Premier League has voted to allow clubs to loan players from clubs that are also owned by the same ownership group. That sort of came up this year. It's an odd one because like there's been like for example, Citigroup has owned other clubs for a long time. Same with Chelsea having in the past their ownership having some Stokes in the fire and some other clubs. So it's an interesting one to come up now. I think it does feel as if I'm not going to put on the tinfoil hat and say that this is only being voted on and came up for discussion due to Newcastle having injury crisis and the PIF also owning 5 clubs with world-class players on them. But you could probably connect the dots and then look at how teams voted and some of the teams that have spoken out against Newcastle or have been not publicly spoken out, but have been rumored to have some sort of disdain for this current ownership group, Liverpool, Spurs, etc., were the same ones who voted against voted against this rule that would allow clubs to loan from clubs they also own. I personally think, before Josh gets into it, I think this is all overblown, and I think it starts with somewhere along the line, someone suggested that Newcastle get Ruben Neves. They had injuries in midfield, and obviously Tonali being suspended, like, that doesn't help the case. I don't feel, and maybe if you've seen this, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't feel like I ever saw a legitimate link Mm-mm. from an actual journalist that was like Newcastle Mm-mm. interested in this player. It always felt as if like that's something that the tabloid sites had just said Newcastle could do. It was always like a Fabrizio saying, oh, this would allow Newcastle, if this rule passes, this would allow Newcastle to sign Ruben Neves. And like that weird, like bad publicity has blown this entire, like realistically not that big of a deal rule that likely like doesn't really, that likely won't actually affect Newcastle out of proportion. Like it's everyone's made this about Newcastle when like they've ignored the fact that Newcastle can't afford to loan in Ruben Neves. Like literally, they literally cannot afford to do that with his wages being more than like half the team combined.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's why this falls into my new category called punk ass news. So there's this thing that, you know, I think that there were some people maybe on TalkSport or other podcasts that, or not podcasts, but shows in general that may have, I think, spread some fear mongering about the what ifs. I think there are some anti-Newcastle, you know, shows out there and pundits that caught on to maybe some of the clickbaity things that were out in Twitterverse. And they said, well, what if they did this? And they, you know, went on these hour long rants on their shows and, you know,
how it's not fair and all this other.
And, you know, and guess who's listening? You know, guess who's listening? Like there's the traditional big, you know, the traditional big six who feel threatened. And so this wasn't something that was ever going to go to a vote. Like there was no reason. This was an emergency meeting, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, it was an emergency meeting. And and then there's infighting because Sheffield was allowed to vote on this for some reason, which I understand. Like I have no idea why. Like
because they have been and they could be back. I don't know.
Yeah, it's all silly. And like you said, there are certain radio shows like TalkSport who, like they, it, at this point, it's getting ridiculous. It's been this way since the
dawn of time. I feel like even
not the dawn of time, but group. I'll tell you where TalkSport really started realizing they would get content and not get content, but run numbers up on social and online and get more clicks and plays and views by just blatantly making an enemy of Newcastle fans was, I remember it was the end of the Rafa Benitez tenure where Rafa was complaining about the lack of spending for Mike Ashley. And I think it might have started out as like genuinely saying, oh, okay. Like I know Mike Ashley, he's been a good owner. He saved, like there was some legitimacy in those takes early on. But then it kind of kept spiraling once the Bruce hire
wasn't
happened.
Wasn't there somebody that said, go spend your own money?
Like, yes, that was on TalkSport. That might have been, what was it? It might have been Rio Ferdinand, actually, who said that.
Oh, dude, he's horrible.
Yeah, so anyway, sorry for clearing my throat.
Oh, sorry. So I was just looking at this, like, this is, it was a vote for nothing, basically, because only six or seven teams or organizations voted in favor of it and the rest voted against it. And like, we wouldn't have even been the first ones to do it. I think Watford is owned by Giampaolo Pozzo, and he also owns Udinese and Granada, right? And so Watford is known to have brought in players from Udinese. Like, this isn't like a surprise. So we wouldn't have even been the first ones. So you could see why other organizations would have said, don't, you know, like, no, like, don't do that. Because they know not only is this something that's happened in the past, but honestly, Elijah, I think that that's the system of the future. Like, despite how much we might like the romantic idea of, you know, a club being beholden to its city and to the citizens of where it plays, honestly, I think the future of football is big money and multiple clubs per organization and the rotation of players and contracts to get through loopholes and financial fair play issues. I think it plays a huge part in it. So any club that would have voted for it is just shooting themselves in the foot. And that doesn't mean I agree with the notion of it, but it means like this was neither the time nor the place to take that vote, and it seemed pretty unfair.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's very odd. excuse me. It's very odd that, like you said, it even came up in the first place, considering how many teams in the Premier League have a multi-club model, like even at the baseline level. Not that this would happen, but people forget that Stan Kroenke, also of Arsenal, also owns another team. Crystal Palace, that ownership group between the four of them own, I think, like eight different teams, including like Augsburg, Real Salt Lake, Lyon, Botafogo. Man City obviously has a ton. The Forest owner also owns Olympiacos, and the West Ham owners also own Sparta Prague. So it in Leicester with I think they own a team like in Denmark or something. Brentford have FC Midland. Like it's ridiculous. Like majority of the clubs in the Prem own multiple teams, and that's, I don't know, it's just silly. And even a lot of the in where this is another like small tangent, but even if you look at some of the other like championship clubs, like Sunderland's owner has another club as well. He's a part owner of Marseille, Swansea City, part owner of DC United. And then like QPR, they own their owners own another club. Salford City, part owner of Valencia. Like it's like you said, it's the future. Like to have a multi-club model is legitimately how you become sustainable in the footballing world, especially if you don't have the embarrassment of riches that Man City and Newcastle do. Like you need to own clubs, other clubs, in order to generate revenue, and it's been very successful. Look at the Red Bull model and obviously Citigroup. All right, we have to move on, so we will. I do want to, because it's been a while, we should give a Newcastle update. And again, apologies to everyone who's having to hear me clear my throat, but it just has to happen.
Let me clear my throat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the last episode we recorded was the Dortmund loss in the Champions League. Or is that week, and maybe I got sick or something. So I'll just give kind of month of November to date.
Okay.
And go through it, and then just reading the results. So started off the month with the EFL Cup win against Man United, beat Arsenal 1-0 at home in the Premier League, lost to Dortmund, then lost to Bournemouth. I think that was a pretty disappointing week. I'm 90% sure that was the week I was sick. And then obviously this past weekend we played Chelsea and won 4-1, and then we'll talk about this in the next episode. But we drew 1-1 in Champions League play to PSG. Right now, Newcastle sits seventh in the table with 23 points, 17 plus 17 goal differential, 7 wins, 2 draws, 4 losses, and 13 matches played. They are 3 points out of the top 5 right now, still technically in a European spot. I think if things are going, it likely still in some sort of European spot between conference or Europa. I think it goes down to 7 or 8. And they are 5 points out of top 4 in securing Champions League football. Again, Villa currently are in 4th, Arsenal in 1st, Man City in 2nd, Liverpool in 3rd, Tottenham in 5th. Tottenham starting to slip a little bit, but that is beside the point. And then they were just setting the tone to get some general thoughts on Newcastle so far. But Newcastle have a very lengthy injury report right now. So bear with me as we go through all these. We'll start with some of the more obvious ones. Sandro Tonali is not injured. He's suspended. There was even a quote that came out during our hiatus about Eddie Howe saying that Sandro's been doing well in training and he's looked really good in training. So that's cool, I guess. I mean, he's not going to play, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he'll be great next year.
Yeah. Jacob Murphy's got a shoulder injury. It looks like he's not going to return until potentially the new year. So that's exciting. Dan Burns got a lower back injury. Also probably not going to return until the new year. Callum Wilson's dealing with a thigh injury. He didn't travel with the England national team. Maybe he's back for Boxing Day. Elliot Anderson had that lower back injury. It was a stress fracture, and that was like a four to six week timetable.
Yeah.
So he could be back by the end of December. Sven Botman, been out for a minute. And it looks like the last injury update that was given is that they're still unsure. This is on November 24th. Still not sure how long Sven Botman's going to be out, but they're hoping that he can rejoin the group pretty quickly. Harvey Barnes' bone, ankle, whatever injury has started to heal up. He started running. He's likely going to be able to return in the next couple of weeks. So that's a positive, potentially as early as next week. Mm-hmm. Sean Longstaff and Joseph Willock picked up injuries over the course of the international break. Sean Longstaff seems to be less serious. He's like kind of day to day. Joe Willock, not exciting to see this, but the only thing I see on this injury report is Achilles injury. So that's never good. Javi Manquillo has had a groin problem since the middle of October. Matt Target, who we saw like out there and got like he made a spot start and injured himself. So that was not exciting. And then, of course, I think I said Jacob Murphy. Yeah, I did say Jacob Murphy, who we didn't talk about this, but because I don't think we recorded, but he re-injured himself after coming back when we were like, there's no way he's going to be able
right,
to
his
play.
Shoulder. Yeah.
And then he literally got on the pitch and immediately re-dislocated his shoulder.
You could the second time he looked like absolutely aghast, right?
But also make us the physios, because I distinctly remember when he dislocated his shoulder and we were like, oh, he should be out for like a month. And then he just played I remember saying like, oh, there's no chance he's playing, and he played the next match and then he injured himself again. I was like, well, this is dumb.
I think he was faking the funk. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was feeling okay and he knew deep down that he needed more time off, but he was telling you know, everybody that would listen, no, I'm fine.
But there's again, I'm not a physio, I'm not a doctor. In no world do I think the only injuries, a dislocation that I think you can come back from almost immediately is finger. Yeah. I mean, and there's a Hawks player who's dislocated two fingers separately and played like, and came back the same game.
Tape them up.
Same games. Yeah. You just tape them up and stabilize them. And especially in soccer, like, I mean, you're not using your fingers unless you're Tino Livramento. But anyway, so all that to say, Newcastle like made it through a tough stretch. Maybe they lost against a Bournemouth team they shouldn't have lost to, but I don't know, Josh, how are you feeling approaching the midway point in the season about Newcastle?
Look, the injuries got me down. The results, the results are beyond expectation for the current injury situation that we're in. This is a genuine crisis. Like, he had three keepers on the bench, and we'll get into the Chelsea game, I'm sure. But the three keepers on the bench for the Chelsea game, and then, you know, two or three on the bench for the Champions League match. Like, when you don't even have enough players to take with you, you know, on a European night, like, you're not, it's not hot. But somehow, I'm left disappointed by the Bournemouth result. It's instead of feeling like, well, that's what should have happened, you know, given the circumstances, I'm unreasonable. I'm unreasonably disappointed that we didn't get something from that game. And
tough stretch, to be fair, because it was three matches in the span of 6 days. So you're asking a lot.
So when I try to dial it in and be reasonable, I'm completely blown away by Newcastle's ability to sort of stay where they're at in the table and grind out these results. It's something that a champion club does, that a winner does, is win the games that you're not expected to win and stay in the fight until you start to get your players back. And yeah. I think it's gonna further enrage a lot of these clubs that just hate us right now. Like Arsenal fans genuinely hate Newcastle. Like they were wishing injuries, further injuries upon us during the matches that don't involve them, that have nothing to do with them, but they're chiming in social media, and it's just like, we're not the ones, like the players aren't responsible for the VAR review. Like, if VAR is, if that's what the refs call and that's what the VAR is, like that's not on the players. But the level of hatred and vitriol, and I've told you this for 2 years now, right? It's the level of hubris and expectation and entitlement that's coming from these teams at the top, the Manchester Uniteds, the Liverpools and the Arsenals. I've never liked them because they feel like they should just win. And if anytime they don't win, there's got to be a reason other than the fact that, hey, they just didn't win. They can't accept that. There's always this reason. So anyway, all of that tirade having been said, like, I'm feeling pretty good that Newcastle has got themselves in a table position where they're at. And even if they go into this next stretch of matches, which is really not easy, especially considering all these injuries, if they drop a few games, which is entirely possible, right? If we're just being reasonable, if they drop a few games, that's also still okay. Right, they've earned enough points that maybe at the end of the year when it all adds up, they might still finish in that top eight, top six, maybe. But right now, they're doing a good job of putting themselves in a place where they can absorb a few more bad results in exchange for getting players back. And fingers crossed that they do.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to consider is like you're still in the EFL Cup, you still got the FA Cup coming up. You're still technically not, you're technically still in Europe. So like all that being said, this could end up being not at like this could be a solid scenario of, maybe Newcastle miss out on European football, but, I think fans would be happy given the injury crisis, with a deep cup run again, potentially playing in another cup final. I think if Newcastle were to continue somehow, some way, finish second in the group, actually, it's not somehow, some way. I think if they win next week, they could finish in the next.
Dortmund has to beat PSG, and then we'll get into that.
Yeah, we can get into that. But anyway, all that being said, like they could continue their Champions League run. Obviously, could also get thrown into the Europa League bracket as well. So like, it's all in all, like, given that I felt as if, and I was partially right, that I felt as if the matches were going to pile up and the injuries were going to pile up for Newcastle, and you could have another West Ham situation where West Ham were fighting relegation to, they were doing great in Europe, but fighting relegation to the very end. I felt that could happen with Newcastle this season, or at least them be firmly mid-table and not really be still competing for a European spot. But the tone of all of the presenters after the Chelsea match was that, like, if you're looking at, who is more likely to get back in good graces and really start to, again, challenge for a European spot, maybe not maybe after not having, like, the start that they had wanted to the season between Chelsea and Newcastle, that was kind of the storyline for the match. Everyone walked away saying, oh, well, Newcastle clearly like the better team, and there's a chance that they could sneak back in Europe. So all that to say, one final thought on just the kind of status of Newcastle. There's been a lot of guys injured. Who has impressed you the most in their ability to kind of step up in place of someone injured, or just someone who's elevated their game, who's maybe a regular already, but elevated their game to kind of keep Newcastle afloat during this injury crisis?
I mean, it's either Gordon or Livramento, right? I mean, these are two players who have everything. They tick all the boxes as far as the skill sets are concerned. But and I think maybe Gordon was always going to be a starter this season. Like, maybe that was his destiny.
And Gordon's been probably the player of the season for Newcastle pre-injuries as well. Like, he was, by and large, their best player to start the season.
But I think the injuries have forced the issue with getting Livramento involved. And as much as I love Dan Brown, really, like...
Oh, Dan Brown.
Dan Brown, Dan Byrne. I like Dan Brown books too. Come on, man, it's late. As much as I love Big Dan Byrne, like, he may not have a starting position to come back to, right? This may change the way that back line plays. It may be a little bit more dynamic with Livramento. He may play right. He may play left. He and Trips could switch during the game.
I mean, it went during
the flow of play. You know what I mean?
I mean, we've seen in the past three matches, each one of them has started at left back.
Yeah, you see that sometimes with wingers, you know, because that throws off the opposing team's fullbacks. But when you've got fullbacks and wingers switching indiscriminately during the flow of the game, and just it can really throw off the balance of the opponent's defense, especially if they're doing man marking, they're fucked, right?
Yeah, I know Pep and Arteta have both employed that. I feel like Arsenal might have tried that. I think Arsenal did try a fullback swap during the Newcastle match. I mean, it didn't work for them, but like it's a good strategy to have that. Like Newcastle could never employ if Dan Byrne was
or Dan Brown, starter. Either one.
Yeah, either one. But I think those are two good shouts. I think for me, the other two names that stick out to me, and for slightly different reasons. I think, well, actually, maybe the same, maybe similar reasons, but the first one to me is Jamal Lascelles, who people forget was the first to be called on.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a guy who, like, we don't need to go through the whole Jamal Lascelles gave up the captaincy.
But he was all but lost, good. Right?
Yeah.
He was all but gone.
I think the big thing is that I don't think anyone was like, Jamal Lascelles is bad. Like, I don't think that was the sentiment anymore. But I do think it was very clear that Sven Botman is a border, like it has the potential to be a borderline, like world-class center back, like in the sense of he is that good. And he'd made such big strides last year and adjusted well to the Prem. And don't forget this back line last year was one of the best back lines in the Prem, like led the, like had a ton of clean sheets. And you know, towards the end of the season, was not producing the way that they were earlier in the season, but a really good back line. And that was kind of the baseline for Newcastle's success last year was they were so solid at the back that like the attack had opportunities to figure out even when it didn't look the best. And once the attack really got going, it was like Newcastle, if they scored first, they weren't losing. Like if it was 1-0, like, it didn't matter if the match was going to end 1-0 or if it was going to end 4-0. Like, the back line wasn't giving up a goal. And so for Lascelles to step into that and by and large still the back line be a strength for Newcastle, just, you know, in, especially given that he's had to play against the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, you know, he's got Manchester United coming up. There was the City match, the EFL Cup match, and that wasn't totally him, obviously. But again, stepped up, had big shoes to fill with a really good center back pairing, and has stepped right in. And Fabian Scheer has obviously done his job moving over to the left, but it's just been really, really impressed with him. And then the other one, which to me is the big one, is Lewis Miley played 90 minutes against Chelsea and looked like the best midfielder.
He looked like he belonged. Yeah, he was on the tip of my tongue too. And
and to be fair, for him, it's been recent, you know, because like it took him a couple. Like he played in the Bournemouth match, I want to say as well. So he definitely took a little bit to adjust, but once he did adjust, boy oh boy, he's looked really good. So shout out to Luke.
You know what's really amazing about that? And some of the other youngsters that came on at the end of the Chelsea game, but in particular, Miley, is, you know, 10 years ago, when we're waist deep in the Ashley regime, if a player came through the system like that, and if there was any interest from a bigger club, he'd be gone, right?
Yeah.
We'd have him for a year, but I guarantee you at the end of the year, that you and I, at the end of this year, you and I will read, you know, we'll read Manchester City has interest in Miley, or, you know, Arsenal has interest in Miley. Probably not Arsenal.
they'll beat like Villa or
yeah,
West
other
Ham,
clubs
like, yeah.
who would normally have been able to offer a fair market value for the player, but maybe just enough that it was worth it to sell him.
Yeah,
you know, Ashley would have taken the money and undercut the team, you know,
yeah.
for profit. And now we're in and here's the benefit of having all that wealth. It isn't about how much money can be spent. That's you know, we haven't seen the tip of the iceberg on how much money they can spend. I think we need to be in the Champions League for several years and have, you know, income coming in so that we can spend that kind of money. You know, that's how that works. But when you have that kind of money, it's about what you don't have to sell to keep going. Oh, yeah. We can keep the lights on without selling our best young players. We can actually grow this one to be, a legend.
Yeah. Yeah, I agreed. And I think most recent example I think people probably have is Sean Longstaff almost being sold to Manchester United for £20 million, which there was a time period in which Sean was playing and you're like, man, should have taken that money. But obviously he's proven us all wrong. Yeah. So I'm really excited for his future. He just is looking way more comfortable, and I'm excited. So let's just get into it. Newcastle won this past weekend against Chelsea. Emphatic 4-1 win. Good to get back to winning ways. Some might call it a statement win. I don't know what I'd call it. I think it was a very good win. I want to quickly go through the three words. Eric Schmidt says, bring on Paris. Josh set up his three words by saying seven yellows, including a sending off for their captain. Why so mad, bros? Which is the three words. Duke of Northumberland said, fucking get in. Kim Avery said, we needed that. John R. says, three keeper bench, which hilarious. Alex in the field of Cornwall says, more rum, please. And the other ones are GIFs that are not three words, so I'm not reading them. But yeah, 4-1 win for Newcastle. Really solid win. Exciting game from start to finish. Honestly, it was actually a pretty tight game up until basically right before the sending off. It was pretty tight. And Newcastle scored in the 60th and 61st to make it like a 3-1 game. But it was 1-1 for a good bit of the match with both teams having chances. Final score was 4-1. Isak, Lascelles, Joe Ellington and Anthony Gordon scoring for Newcastle. Raheem Sterling with a peach of a free kick for Chelsea. Starting lineups, Newcastle went to 4-3-3. Pope in goal, Trippier, Lascelles, Cher, Livermento as the back line. Lewis Miley, Bruno, and Joe Ellington in the midfield. Almiron, Isak, and Anthony Gordon all starting up top. Chelsea went to 4-2-3-1 with Cucurella, Badiashi, Silva and Reece James as their back line with Sanchez in goal. Badiashi also making his, I think it's his like second or third appearance for Chelsea this season because he's been injured. Enzo Fernandez and Ukechukwu were the holding midfielders with Sterling, Connor Gallagher, and Cole Palmer, famously black person Cole Palmer, as the attacking midfielders with Nico Jackson up top. So yeah, solid lineups. Nothing super surprising. Chelsea probably definitely, as Josh mentioned earlier, had the better bench. That Caicedo on the bench, Mudryk, Armando Broja, Levi Colwill, Madueke, who I think on one podcast I called Maduki, and just a lot of guys. Where Newcastle had three keepers, including Loris Karius and Mark Gillespie, who just didn't even know they could both play in the Prem anymore. Matt Ritchie was the only like trusted attacking sub Newcastle could make. Everything else was just a complete like crapshoot. Diallo and Amadou Diallo and Michael Ndouini both made their Newcastle professional debuts in this match. Alex Murphy's played before, but he came on as a defender. And there was Parkinson. Ben Parkinson was on the bench as well, which someone said, should we sub on Parkinson? And I thought that they were like making a joke about like Parkinson's disease, and I was like, oh, I was about to be like, dude, that's not cool. Like we shouldn't call Matt Ritchie Parkinson's. And then I realized that there was actually a player named Ben Parkinson.
It turns out you made the joke anyway.
Yeah. That's on me. How do you want to do it? I guess I can talk just.
What's the question? Flow.
Huh? What's the question?
What's the question?
Match thoughts? Yeah, match thoughts. Just as a quick recap and how this sort of flowed, pretty back and forth match. Like I said, to start off, Isak got the opening goal for Newcastle off a Lewis Miley assist. So shout out to Lewis Miley's first assist for the club. I'm not going to say it was a great ball. It kept being described as like really good ball. It was the right pass to make. Actually came in a little hot. Isak had to turn and shoot, but that's what you want from your number nine. Obviously he missed the last five matches for Newcastle with injury. So good to see him get back. Starting again, but also starting with a bang. Couple more chances for Newcastle, couple chances for Chelsea. Probably the big thing was a lot of, like, even early on, just a lot of fouls were being given. This is going to be one of those matches. In total, a fair few players got yellow cards. I think this did happen in the first half. One of the bigger things to just make mention of is Reece James got a yellow card. I think it was either early second half or the beginning of the
really
at the end of the first half, but got a yellow card for kicking the ball away, which Newcastle have seen that happen week one of the Prem with Bruno. And then Sterling scored in the 23rd minute off of a free kick. Really good free kick goal. People were a little upset with Nick Pope. But I don't see why you'd be upset with Nick Pope there.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. Sterling got that up and down really quick. You got to give him credit.
Yeah, and over the wall, like it's a blind spot. Yeah,
He's unsighted by his own line, so there's not much you can do. I mean,
Only other scary moment. There was a pretty good chance for Connor Gallagher, who just like. It was a mistake by Nick Pope, and he just gave the ball directly to Connor Gallagher, and he just like took the ball, beat Livermento, just kicked it wide or shot it wide. And then right before the close of the half, Kieran Trippier had a free kick that hit the bar, which is nice. But again, very exciting first half. A lot of yellows for both sides, a lot of back and forth, a lot of chances. And second half started off with a bang as well. Lascelles picked up a yellow early on. That's when Reece James actually got the yellow after the foul where he kicked the ball away. It was a foul awarded. It was a foul awarded to Newcastle player. And then as Bruno was trying to pick up the ball, Reece James kicked it away. And then that's right before. It's just a rough 10-minute stretch for Reece James. 5 minutes later, Jamal Lascelles scores off of a wonderful cross from Anthony Gordon, and Lascelles just had a free header and got on the end of it. And really, always great, like, to see him score.
But like he made it look like it was a run of the mill header, right? It was like that was the header that Joelinton should have completed early in the first.
Yes,
half, right.
And that is just, true.
You know, and then
Joelinton did miss from a 3 feet out. It was pretty
doesn't
bad.
He do that though? He kind of has that. He has that. Yes. In him.
And I think like there was already the jokes about like, oh, that's why he's not a striker. And obviously he then goes on to score a harder chance in the match, which is very like the confidence for Joelinton is there, which is great. But funny, like the amount of free headers Joelinton has just left. He could probably have doubled his goal tally.
That's not as bailiwick as they say in the South.
Yeah. Yeah, so Lascelles scored, made it look easy, unlike Joelinton. Joelinton then just got a gift from Thiago Silva. I'm not really sure what Thiago Silva was trying to do in this situation.
He looked
40.
And you saw that move, like, was that in the first half where his feet
he
fell on his ass?
It was bad.
And I think you ever look at a player and you go, oh, man, like, you're old now.
Yeah.
I had that emotional sensation. I think it was when, and this marks my age, but when Joe Montana made the move from the 49ers to the Kansas City Chiefs back in the 90s or something. And like, I remember watching him move around. I'm like, he was never very speedy, but he was getting whacked left and right.
Or
recently, you know, I'm watching LeBron James and I'm like, dude is just like, he's still good. Like he's better than I'd, you know, like anyone, but he doesn't move that much anymore. Sort of just people run into him. He's just like a big tank out there.
Yeah. And it's wild because LeBron's also averaging like 30 points a game.
He's just good. But Silva, long story short, like he just looked his age finally.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say is that he has not looked his age in some time now. This is one of the first matches where I'm like, oh, he looks old. Okay. And then, like you said, he gave the ball directly to Joel Anton, who just beat the keeper. Nothing crazy. Right after that, Reece James gets subbed off 10 minutes later. Not subbed. He gets sent off 10 minutes later. Chelsea did bring on a few subs. Mudrick came on. Armando Broja came on. Caicedo came on. So good subs for them to bring on. Unfortunately, none of that mattered because Reece James had a normal yellow card tackle. Sure. And you know, you could say what you want about whether or not Newcastle's players should have had reds or yellows earlier in the match, but I think most people would agree this is a yellow card tackle. Unfortunately for Reece James, it was his second yellow. And this has happened a couple times this season, not for Newcastle, but for some other teams. I don't think it's happened in a Newcastle match where really the first yellow for either descent towards the ref with the fake yellow card waving, that kind of stuff, or the ball kicked out thing has really come to bite a team in the ass. Mm-hmm. When like a normal challenge that has to be a yellow becomes now a red. That's what happened with Reece James. The match was at this point, like, Chelsea were pretty defeated, so it didn't make that much of a difference. But yeah, they brought on Levi Colwill to kind of play in the back line. Cucurella picked up yellow. Colwill picked up yellow. Matt Ritchie came on. And then Anthony Gordon scored from a pretty nifty outside of the boot pass from Miguel Amarone, who then was subbed off. And like, it wasn't like Miguel had a bad game. It just like, he wasn't the best player for Newcastle. But it was like an anti-time wasting thing. Like, he was trying to get off the pitch and he was on the other side of the pitch. But it just looked funny because he exited from the opposite side of the pitch. So it looked like Miguel Amarone was doing a lap of honor after doing the one thing that will show up in the stat sheet in the match where he got the assist. But it just turned out, it just looked funny. And me and my friends were joking about it. At that point, match is over. Paul Dummett comes on for Jamal Lascelles. At this point, Newcastle are resting for PSG. Alex Murphy comes on for Miguel Amarone. Diallo comes on for Lewis Miley. And I forgot who, what's his face came on for? Ndouidi. I forgot. I can't even say his name. Ndouidi. I'm going to learn this guy's name because he's in our academy. But yeah,
he came on for Gordon.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I just Matt Ritchie, you know, just doing the business. He came in and he got, I think,
got a yellow.
Well, he got a yellow, but he got Mudrick all wound up, you know, and
yeah,
and I think old Radji was back. And here's the thing: is I don't think Mudrick's very good. Like, he's fast, but he runs a straight line, and I don't think he's very good with the ball. And I think we were linked with him at some point last year, and I think we dodged a bullet. I just don't think he would have fit. Plus, he's got a stupid haircut. But
I think Mudrick would have fit better at Newcastle than he is at Chelsea, because I think he's a player that if you get him pressing, he probably becomes a little bit more dangerous than Chelsea's doing.
Well, here's the thing: is I think Chelsea came here. Now, first, Poch wasn't on the bench. I think he was up in the stands, right?
He was in the stands.
But I felt like they came here with a game plan of hearsay. They had heard that Newcastle plays a certain way. So they came here looking for a fight. You know, you look at the amount of fouls. They came here chipping away. I mean, it was like game plan number one. And I don't think that we were set up to play that way. And I think that we got goaded into, you know, getting a little chippy back, but that's not our, you know, that's not what we were looking for. And I feel like the way that these big clubs react to these games, some of the managers, they don't really look at the tactics behind it. I think that they just sort of like, you know, they read the quick notes about how a game might have gone down, and they just thought, well, let's line up for a fight. That's not what they got a fight, but I don't think they were ready to get punched in the face like that. So, Chelsea's a good team on paper.
Yeah,
like, that's a really good squad, and they should be doing a lot better than they're doing, to be honest with you.
I will say it did feel to me like that Chelsea were still, I think they, I don't think they adjusted their lineup for the team that they were playing. They largely started a lot of the guys who, I mean, they only made two changes from the Man City match in which they won 4-4, and they brought in another sort of physical midfielder to play to mess with Bruno, which I think is a good move on their end. But outside of, and then they brought in Badiashile, I don't know how to say his name still, to kind of get him back in rhythm. And I don't know if there's a good time to bring a player back in, but everything else felt the same. And it's just like, matchup wise, do you think Cucurella is going to match up well against Anthony Gordon? I would have said no. Like, I don't know why that would happen. Like, to me, I wouldn't have started Cucurella. Like, Sterling, I think their attack was fine. I think Cole Palmer, Gallagher, and Sterling are great options. And Nico Jackson was before the Man City match and a match before was like not scoring well for them. So I don't know. It just felt it felt like they thought that they had kind of gotten their groove back with a certain group of players, and it just didn't really work out in the end.
No groove.
And a lot of hotheads on that team. And I think they're in a weird spot where they just have bought so many players that it's really hard to get any sort of cohesion. Like, you spent so much on Mudryk, but you also spent a lot on Cole Palmer, and you spent the season before a decent penny on Raheem Sterling. Like, you can't play all of them at the same time. Same with Madueke as well. Like, you brought in like five attackers that all are wingers, and there's only two wing spots, and you can only play them, you know, consistently. It's silly. We don't need to go down a Chelsea rabbit hole.
The last thing, you know, just my perspective on the way Chelsea spent money. It's an overpriced way. It's an overpriced Forest. Do you remember last year when Forest got into the Prem and just like bought a bunch of players? Mm-hmm. I feel like Chelsea is doing the same thing with its new ownership. It's just spending a bunch of money on players just to see what sticks. And they're going to have to sell off a few more. I would expect to see two or three of them go probably maybe not three in January, but they'll sell at least one or two in January and bring something in that Poch will have to start to make some balance. I would see the second time that we play them. When is that going to be? We've got them in the EFL Cup. And then we don't have them again probably till the end of the season, March 9th. I would say by 9th. March 9th, Poch might have them a little bit more balanced, especially if he can get, I think, a more dynamic central midfielder who can maybe replace what they were trying to do with, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see it. I think we're going to see a different Chelsea later.
And they also don't buy for the system that Poch is playing. It feels
they should.
Like it feels like. And maybe Poch doesn't know what system he wants to run, but it feels like all the Newcastle targets and players they've signed, there's been some where it's like Bruno and Trippier are just technically very good players that were better than what Newcastle had. And at the time, you're not thinking about what system, blah, blah, blah. But like Anthony Gordon fit the mold of like he's a attacking, athletic winger that has some tactical ability that works really hard. He seems like a guy that would work in Eddie Howe's pressing system where he's demanding his wingers press all the time. So like that makes sense, you know? And so, and same with Tonali was like, all right, he's an eight that might be able to play a little bit of six, but you could look at him and say, okay, they want him to kind of be an upgrade in tactical ability over Sean Longstaff. Every Chelsea signing, it just feels like they went to the players' highlight videos on YouTube and just were like, oh, this guy looks sick, and then bought him. Like that's what Chelsea's recruitment strategy feels like. And yeah, it's easy if you're a Chelsea fan to get excited about all these players because legitimately great young players, but I fail to see how they all fit together at times. So anyway, you got a man of the match?
What did I say?
I think you said Bruno, maybe.
Yeah, Bruno, maybe. Here's my thing with Bruno, and I think this might be an unpopular take because people love Bruno, but Bruno largely, if he's not fouling people, I think he's actually quite anonymous, and that may make some people say, "Whoa!" Like, but I think Bruno makes his job look so easy that sometimes you forget that if he didn't have a big head of blonde hair, you wouldn't know he's out there. And then all of a sudden he'll pop up and do something pretty amazing, right? But he's like the engine room, right? He's making everything go. And so I could say that Bruno was the man of the match. You know, you could give kudos to Lewis Miley again. Like, we've spoken well of him. Gordon, obviously. Like, there's just something. Like, Gordon is the tempo. If Gordon, you know, if Gordon's the tempo and Bruno is the engine room, I don't know. They both tick in different ways that make the team work. But yeah, I'd say Bruno had a really good match.
Yeah. Yeah, I think given the limited opportunities, I think Isak deserves a shout. I still think there's not been great connection from the midfield to attack to the striker. So sorry to Isak, but limited opportunities made the most of it. I'm going to also say I think Gordon's probably my man of the match, especially when you get to a point where when Isak was subbed off, and again, it was only a few minutes. But like when Gordon moves centrally, and it's just like, oh yeah, this guy also over the summer learned how to be a pretty solid center forward as well, which eases your mind a little bit when you realize how injury prone one of the strikers is. And I'm not going to drink the Josh Kool-Aid about Isak being injury prone until,
He's back for good.
Yeah, sure. And then also a shout out to Livermento. He's once again was really good. Has been just. I'm with you. I don't think that he loses that spot to Dan Byrne. I think that's his to keep. All right. Let's go ahead and move on. Close out the show. Try to keep this underneath that hour threshold. So we'll actually it'll be over an hour, so I'm not going to try to keep it under the hour threshold. Newcastle have another match this weekend. They are playing Manchester United. There's a long list of injuries. I'm not going to go through all of them again, but like we said, Newcastle are bare bones. So the guys who are available for PSG, I don't think there's going to be anyone getting healthy. I think potentially you could see Harvey Barnes on the bench. He started doing physical activity and running and training and stuff earlier in November. That's a big maybe, but I don't know. That's pretty much it in terms of who I would say is going to come back injury-wise. On the Manchester United side, they've been dealing with some injuries as well. I don't think their injury crisis is to the degree of Newcastle per se, but they have some injuries nonetheless. Casemiro's out with a hamstring injury. Mason Mount is out with a calf injury. Hojlund's been out with a muscle injury. Taro Malacia has been out. Lisandro Martinez is out right now. Mm-hmm. Christian Eriksen's out as well as Johnny Evans, which, you know, sure. I don't really know if that really matters.
That was their big defensive pickup in the offseason. No?
Yeah. According to few.
I think that was one of the main complaints, actually, is that was their big pickup in the offseason. And that they, I think that the supporters were hoping that they would have maybe picked up a better center,
if they could have. Also, kind of sucks to bring in a striker who has barely played as well. That sucks too. And you're basically still have to deal with the same, like, is Martial or Rashford going to be a striker for us? So sucks for them. Josh, you got what you got for history and stats?
I've got a little bit, not a deep dive this week, but Newcastle versus Manchester United all time. We have 45 wins, 41 draws, 91 L's to this team that sits in sixth place on 24 points. They're 1 point above us in the table. They wear a red shirt, therefore I hate them. According to The Guardian, Manchester United are the in-form side. I think that was as of earlier this week. I'm not quite sure. They have 3 league wins in a row. But in that time, they also lost away to Copenhagen in the Champions League, and we knocked them out of the League Cup on November 1st. They also lost at home 3-0 to City before that good run. And to be quite honest with you, man, I just don't think they're that impressive. Like, and I know they're dealing with injuries and we're dealing with injuries. And so I just don't want to go into whatever comes of this game. I don't want to say it had anything to do with injuries because both teams are suffering. We might be suffering more, but they're missing some big names too, right? Yeah. And so that having been said, I think we're even Stevens on sort of like that this is not our ideal starting lineup. And let's see what comes of this matchup between Newcastle and Manchester United. The other United.
Yeah, I'm friends with a Manchester United fan in Tucson, and he is just constantly disappointed in that team. So I would say the Manchester United faithful probably agree with you in that assessment of Manchester United. They really just have not looked in that impressive this season, and arguably they have not looked good since the Ronaldo departure.
That was a highly touted move by Eric Ten Hag. People were giving him a lot of kudos for having the ball bag to get rid of somebody like that.
Yeah, and I'm not in, like, you know, the Ronaldo apologist, and I'm not a Ronaldo guy, as many of you know. He's not a good person. I have issues with him as an individual. I think tax evasion is way less of a crime than whatever he's doing. But that's neither here nor there. It was very evident regardless that he was not going to fit whatever Ten Hag was going to run. So like systemically, it made sense to get rid of him. I think it is weird to like do the whole like, well, since you got rid of Ronaldo, like blah, blah, blah. Like Ronaldo being on this team would not have made them that much better. Like, he like was if Ronaldo goals. Was still at...
At the very he was
scoring
least,
goals, yeah. but like their defense stinks. Their midfield has no connection, no cohesion whatsoever. Yeah. They still have not figured that out. They still don't have a defensive midfielder that they can rely on. Like Casemiro was a great pickup because they need a defensive midfielder, but he's old and injured. So like there were still issues that were going to be fixed that weren't going to be fixed by just Ronaldo. And I think that's the annoying part is like, you know, oh gosh, you got rid of Ronaldo and now they stink. But it's like they weren't that good before, but people have forgotten that part. Is that like Ronaldo scored goals, but like he's scoring, like he has a brace because they're down 2-0, and he scores. He has a brace to tie it, like against like Crystal Palace, and it's like that. It's great that you have Ronaldo, but you shouldn't be down 2-0 to Crystal Palace.
You know what's interesting is I think 10 years ago. They would have won the Declan Rice lottery. They would have gone out and spent more. They would have picked him up.
Yeah.
I think that their recruiting is just, I think it's their recruiting is just sort of like they don't get it. I think they don't get what they're trying to do. And I think that probably that's a result of too many different coaches in that time span. I don't necessarily like Ten Hag, but I'm not a Man United supporter and I don't have to. But like, if you want that club to do well, you've just got to settle in with some dude for like at least 3 years. Just let him have a run. I feel like every two and a half years, they just ditch whatever system they were trying to install. And then they got to start all over. And sometimes you just got to realize, hey, we're not that team anymore. And we're going to need to take some time to buckle down and rebuild. Like what I think what Chelsea, if they're smart, they're going to stick with Poch for a while. They're just going to let it.
Oh, for sure.
They're going to ride it out. And I think Man
United, also too good of a candidate to like not let it ride out.
But also Chelsea have a history of just getting rid of world-class coaches, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But hopefully new owners and a change for them. Well, hopefully, I don't know. What am I hopeful for? I don't want to see these clubs do well. But just I also, you know, as a fan of football, I guess, as a fan of seeing tidy teams do well, it you know, I hope that Manchester United hold on to their gaffer as he is and they build around his ideas. I hope that that just doesn't start this week.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So who should we look out for?
I wrote Garnacho. I mean, that was you have to look. I've never.
It was a great goal. Yes,
I would never have written Garnacho in my life, except for that was one of the best goals I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was insane. Garnacho. I liked him last year. I want him to do well. Great goal. First goal of the season for him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hell of a goal.
So, I mean, again, great goal, but like I'm not watching out for him.
No. But I am watching out for the Bruno to Martial combo. I think that you saw that also in their recent match with Everton, where they eviscerated Everton. I mean,
yeah.
And Everton's down.
Everton is not good. Yeah.
No, but here's the thing. The Everton was in form and they had 10 points taken off, right? So they're at the bottom of the table in the relegation zone, but they were actually doing okay. They were upper mid-table team.
Yeah.
Doing okay. And this Manchester United team is just like a Jekyll and Hyde, man. So they'll eviscerate this Everton team. And then I think that Bruno and Martial, like if they don't get their combination on point, I don't know if there's much of a threat because they're going to try to go through the middle. I think their build-up play is going to try to go through the middle and hit channels. And I think Martial and Rashford are going to try to run those channels and Bruno's going to try to get it to them. And they're going to try to hit our defense kind of like in the middle, but that's also one of our strengths. And I just think that's because they're just not smart.
Yeah. And, you're spot on about just the duality of them is like, yes, they eviscerated Everton, but they also barely beat Luton 1-0.
Yeah.
They lost to FC Copenhagen
FC they play tomorrow too, as we record what? So they play on a Wednesday.
And then they barely beat Fulham the week before. And before that, they lost 3-0 to Newcastle, 3-0 to Man City.
They're everywhere.
And, you know, it's they're beating teams that they should. Like, yes, you should beat Burnley. Yes, you should beat Crystal Palace, especially when at the time Palace was missing a few players. They then also lost to Crystal Palace in the same week. So it's a lot. I don't know. I don't know what to think of Manchester United besides they're underperforming, but not to the degree of Chelsea. And Newcastle are somewhat, they're overperforming, but not to the degree of like Liverpool. So that's my official pre-match analysis.
Sounds good to me.
And then what do you have for kind of,
do you want some history?
Newcastle predict. Well, I thought you already did history.
Oh, but no, I'll give you a little piece of history and then we can get, then we can do predictions if you want. And this will tie into my prediction. So, January 15th, 1995, Newcastle United played Manchester United at St. James's Park in front of 34,471. Pavel was in between the pipes. Mark Hottinger, Barry Venison, Steve Howie, Darren Peacock were in defense. John Beresford played left back. Robbie Elliott, defensive midfielder. Lee Clark, Rule Fox, Rob Lee were all in the center of the pitch. And do you know Rob Lee's son? I think it's Rob Lee's son. Plays for Wrexham?
No. Oh.
I think that's it. Yeah. So, and then Paul Kitson was up top, up top. Paul Kitson gets his goal in the 67th. Mark Hughes got his goal for Manchester United in the 12th minute. Schmeichel was in between the pipes. You had Erwin Pallister. Steve Bruce was playing center back.
Good.
Nicky Butt, Ryan Giggs, Roy Keane, huge names. Eric Cantona, Mark Hughes, Lee Sharp. and we drew them, even Stevens ones. And I think that's probably what we're going to see this weekend is I think we're going to see two exhausted boxers that don't have the strength to swing too much. And I think we're going to get a pretty pretty even keeled match between, you know, between these two teams. And I think it might end up disappointing 1-1.
I think it's 3-0 Newcastle win.
You think they're going to kill him, huh?
Yeah.
I'd love to be confidence. Wrong. If anyone's happy to be wrong, it's me.
But I also think like Newcastle bounce back better than other teams. And they'll play with some rejuvenated energy. Maybe, and I don't know. I feel gut feeling that we'll just destroy them. So maybe that's me being cocky, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just right.
I hope you're right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's been another episode of CHN Radio. I'm Elijah. That was Josh. Away the lights and we fucking miss. It's like sitting inside a fridge. But I wish I was on the quayside side. Looking at the old time bridge. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again. I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park, at the Gallagher Den in the rain. I'm coming home. And I'm proud to be a Geordie, and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy, and we're hard to understand. And they say it's just self-pity, and we're not so very tough. Cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we?" I'm coming home. Miss the old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion, you've all seen him there before. And I love the Geordie heroes, there's so many famous names like Lindisfarne in Gaza, Brendan Foster in the Gateshead Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher Den in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we?" I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher Tent in the rain.